So welcome back. Today we're going to talk about how volume isn't really a thing. Well, kind of. Hey everybody, this is Stephen Reed again. Welcome back to our deep dive into how to not get turned down on your worship team. Because unfortunately it happens at churches near and far where people are up there pouring their heart out to the Lord, but yet you cannot hear what it is that you see. And there's a lot of reasons that we've been going over. And today we're continuing our conversation about how to play consistently because volume isn't really a tool at your disposal, or at least people don't use it very well. So last week we talked about kind of the nature of sound people and how they will turn you down if you stand out at any point. And if you play one moment too loud, you'll often get turned down. And then you'll get left there for a period of time until they kind of like figure out, are you going to play that? Are you going to not play that? And then if they possibly get distracted or they just can't trust you, they're going to leave you down. And so a lot of times people will start out up, and then as the song goes on, they get progressively turned down and turned down. And you make one mistake and then the rest of the service, you're going to be out. Just as a practical example, we had a drummer that was very inconsistent with his snare drum. And so I was running sound a particular Sunday, and I just finally was like, asked him, I was like, hey, can you hit it like in the same place every time and about the same volume? And he looked at me and he was like, well, no one's ever asked me to do that, so I guess I'm not going to. I mean, it was really awkward. And I was like, well, okay. And I just walked back to the sound booth and was like, guess you're just going to get turned down. Because what happened is if you can't hit it the same every time, then I have to turn you down or up all the time. Well, I'm not going to do that. I don't have that much time. And so the loudest hit you do, I'm going to make that loudest hit sound right. And so then everything else that you're hitting then is going to be too quiet. And so then because it's sporadic, then I can't trust him to leave it louder because who knows what's going to happen. And so it's a big deal to then, again, play it right so that way it's working out. And then there's also the other tools that we talked about, which is going to be compression. And for vocalists, there's the vocal rider, which will adjust those things almost instantaneously, but mechanically leaving you at a particular level. And so for our church, like, we had some compression, but they were kind of anti-compression, and we certainly didn't have some of the things we're going to talk about today in place. And so it just ended up getting turned down. And so a lot of times those kind of things will happen just because of our bad playing. Or today what we're talking about is just kind of a general misunderstanding about how volume works, because we think that things are getting louder when in fact they're not actually getting louder. And I know that sounds crazy because you're like, yeah, no, it is getting louder because we all think it does. That we go from the verse is at this particular level and we get to the chorus and we're going to all go up this extra level because we're going to go to a 10 in intensity or a 9 in intensity. But it's actually on recordings for sure. And most of the time in the live setting, you're going to, well, you should at least. I mean, otherwise it's going to make everybody want to raise their hands about this high to the Lord and give him one of those. But how we want to find out and how I want to prove to you that volume isn't really a thing is that I want you to get out your decibel meter if you have one. And if you don't have a physical standalone decibel meter, you can actually get one on your smartphone. Usually there's free or for a very low cost. And what it's doing is it is using the microphone to hear how loud the sound is around you, and then that will translate that into a number. And then from this number, you can get a good sense of how much louder something is as compared to something else, because sometimes we get really misled by our perception of how loud things are by some of the things we're gonna talk about today. And then part of it, just like in the sense of your mood, if you wake up in the morning, something that would maybe register at 90 decibels would seem extremely loud, whereas the same thing in the evening or after you had worked out, or maybe while you're working out, 90 would seem super quiet and you would want to make that louder. And so our perception of volume and volume changes is actually pretty bad. And so that's why we need that decibel meter. And I would encourage every church to have one, because you don't want to get to above certain numbers and you don't want to stay below certain numbers, because then it will make people feel awkward and not want to participate. And that's a conversation maybe for another day, another time. But it's very difficult to observe and know, like as a sound person, especially be like, oh yeah, this is about the right volume. Because your ears will eventually wear out on you and you will get accustomed to that, and it will still seem like you need to make it louder, make it louder, make it louder. And then by the time that service actually happens, it's so loud because your ears are worn out that it's way too loud for the people that are just walking in the door. And so whenever I lead sound, I always have a decibel meter. If they don't have a standalone one, I will get mine out and I leave it there, because there's just certain places where I'm going to keep it at this volume. And then if it goes above that, then I'm going to turn the whole thing down. And that is something that's very important, because in our recorded music, that is actually happening all the time. And so as I talked about last week, and I'll mention again, we use a lot in recording compressors. And compressors basically say, hey, you can get to this amount of volume, which is called the threshold. And then once you get above that level, we're going to start turning you down at whatever rate we decide, and that's the ratio. So a 2-to-1 ratio would be, for every 2 decibels that you're going above whatever we said was the threshold, we're going to push you back and you can only get 1 decibel louder. And so we're going to keep doing that and doing that. Some things are squashed down harder than others. But when we get to the final mix, the mastering stage, which is, you know, so many people are very like, what exactly are you doing in that thing? One of the major components of that is that we're going to make the quiet things louder, but we're also going to completely limit how loud something is going to be. And we will kind of push all of the sound up against that limiter. And we call that limiter a brick wall limiter, meaning that there is nothing that is going to get past that. It's kind of like a force field, if you will, and you can go up to that force field and you can push it with your finger and you can't get any further. You could punch it, it wouldn't get any further. You could run with all of your might into it and you wouldn't get any further. You could get in a car and go, you could get in a spaceship and try to push against that force field and it's gonna hold it. You can't get any further than that. And so that is done to almost every project that is put out into the world. And it makes the volume of every part of the song basically the same volume. And I know that seems crazy, Steve, how could that possibly be? But I want you to go and check it out. And I do this with my students. And then also when I'm on conferences or doing on-site consultations, is we'll get out, everybody gets out their decibel meter, and we try to, you know, make sure that we've got something that's like basically all the same. And then I will play a song and I will start on the verse and I'll say, let's all notice what's the average rating here. And right, and it may fluctuate a tiny bit, but it should be pretty consistent. And so we'll turn it all up and we'll say, I've got 95, I've got 94, I've got 96 or whatever, but it should be pretty close. And then we'll say, all right, here comes the chorus. What do you think it's gonna go up to? All right, or just watch. And so it'll go to the chorus and it'll still be 95, or you know, the person will be 94 or 96, but it'll stay consistent. And I'll be like, all right, here comes the big bridge. And then, it stays exactly the same again. All right. And so we then have this, you know, hopefully aha moment where people are realizing, okay, volume changes, or what we would say in the music world, dynamics, in the sense of things getting louder and quieter in the recorded world, isn't really a thing. But we think that it is. And so this is what I would call perceived dynamics, meaning that we can tell that something's different and we feel like it's getting louder, but it's not actually getting louder. So you probably will not believe me until you actually go and try this. So I would encourage you to go do that. If you have, do it right now. And, you know, come back and then listen to the rest of what I have to say, because it's a little shocking how we can fool ourselves into thinking that it is actually getting louder when it isn't. And so, okay, well then what's happening? And so in recordings, what will most likely happen in those changes where we're getting from what we think is quieter to louder is that it sounds different. And that's a huge key. We do want it to sound different. It sounds more intense or it's just not the same as it was. It'll also potentially do a few things in that it will go from being, low end here to high end here. It'll get more range in the sense of like the bass player will go from playing up higher to then going all the way down. And so the low notes will go as low as they'll go and the high notes will go an octave higher. And so the notes actually get extended out to be further away from each other. And that gives us a sense of, oh, wow, that's actually louder. But it's, again, basically the same volume. The other thing that will happen is that sometimes recordings, because we have this stereo width that is available to us, this stereo field, sometimes recordings will have the panning will be pretty close during the verses, and then when you get to the chorus, it will actually get wider. And so between those three things, right, the sounds changing, sounding more intense, and the notes being lower or higher, making what we would say wider in some ways, but not wider in the sense of the panning, and then certainly then wider in the panning, all right? So in our mono environment, we don't have access to being able to make things wider. So we ought to scratch that one right away. But we can definitely do the trick where we keep our notes within a certain range, and then when we get to certain sections, we are then going lower or going higher. And that definitely makes things feel different or feel louder. Because in some ways, it is filling the sonic spectrum more than it was before. And then for sure, what we can do is then make things sound different when we get between the different sections. The mistake we then make is that we actually start to use volume to try and achieve those things which are not actually volume. And unless we have the technology in place, which most churches do not use compression at all, and then for sure don't use any like mastering compression on the master bus or the main fader, which is possible, but most people don't know how to do that. And that certainly is an option to help you. But if you don't have those things, then basically you just get too loud and then it starts to sound bad. And so that's where the sound person, that's for me. And whenever I run sound, there's just going to come a point where here comes the chorus, here comes the big bridge, and you can feel everybody's like, oh, I got to contribute to this thing. Everybody gets louder and it becomes this like tsunami wave of too much sound. And so then I have to take the master fader, right, the overall volume, and then I have to turn it down, and I'm looking at my decibel meter to be like, I'm trying to keep this at 95 decibels or whatever my number is for wherever I am. And I'm like, I'm gonna turn it down until I get to 95. Okay, here comes, they're done with that. Let's go back to the turnaround. Okay, now I gotta turn it back up to get back to my 95. Because again, on recorded music, that's what we all like, and we wouldn't do it that way if we didn't all like it. It's a big deal. So one of the ways that you can go and see, and that what I'm talking about is actually a real thing, is that you can look at the waveform of the song. And the waveforms are kind of those seismograph looking things where, you know, on earthquakes, where a needle will go up and down based on how intense it is. And we call that amplitude, in the sense of the bigger, the higher the spikes, the louder the sound is. And if you're using multi-tracks, they'll often give you the preview of each individual track and then the overall track as well of how loud something is. And so what will happen is that you will eventually get to, and quite often in the song, it's just going to be a solid line of all of them are reaching the exact same height. And so every once in a while, you'll have a little variation, some lines, and then just solid across, all right? And so what that is that brick wall limiter saying you can get this loud and get no louder. So does it sound fuller? Is it fuller? Absolutely. But is it louder? No. So we got to use that to our advantage and bring that from that recording space into our live space as much as we can with our technology. But then we also have to be able to do that with our skill. So we have to then figure out, okay, if we're not supposed to be getting louder, and if we don't have the technology, then we got to figure out how to play differently. And so I want to show you a few examples of that. One of them is going to be here on the guitar. And so I play guitar quite a bit, play acoustic more these days, but definitely play a lot on electric. Now my electric guitar, I mentioned it last week, I have a compression pedal, and that compression pedal makes it to where no matter how hard I play, it all comes out the same volume. And so that's a bit of technology. I'm not putting that off on the sound person, I'm doing that on my own because I want to stay in the mix and not get turned down as much as I can. But when I turn to my acoustic guitar, I don't have that in my setup. Most of the time I plug into my little amp. Now I could get a compression pedal and put that on there, that would potentially help me. But I also then have to learn how to play like it's compressed without it being compressed. And so I tend to play a lot with my fingers doing picking patterns. And we do something like this for the verses. And if you were to like chart out the scale or the dynamics, you would say, perceived dynamics of the song, you would say, oh, okay, well, it's going to come in at like maybe a 4. And then when the verse comes in, we're going to go up to like a 5 or 6. And when we go to the first chorus, we're going to come up to like an 8. And then we're going to drop back down for the turnaround. And then we're going to go maybe at a 6 for verse 2. And then when we get to the second verse, we're going to be up at like an 8 or a 9. And then we're going to go to the either the instrumental, maybe we'll go to the bridge and we'll go up to a 10. And then we're going to drop back down for a down chorus at maybe a 3 or a 4. And so there's this path that we think that we're supposed to take, right? And there are certain instruments that follow that maybe a little bit more than other, but there's very few because, as I mentioned last week, there's some instruments that are just either in or out. If you play bass, you are either in or out. And so at the beginning, almost every worship song, you will be out for at least one verse, if not two verses, if not the first chorus, and then come in at the next, probably the next verse. And you, when you come in, you don't just kind of like sneak in. It's like, and boom. And your contribution takes the overall feel of it because you're adding that low note to this. Again, seems like it's louder, but it's fuller. It's just better, all right? That's why we like you bass players, and I'm a bass player too at times. And so the guitar, the acoustic guitar, actually will follow the inverse of that thing. And so what happens is that because the acoustic guitar is such a fragile instrument, and I don't mean like construction-wise, which unfortunately it kind of is, but also the sound of it, it's not a very strong thing, whereas it can easily be covered by other instruments. If some other instrument's playing the notes I'm playing, then all you'll be able to hear is the sound of me plucking the strings or hitting the strings, and then that's easily covered by the drums or a tambourine or many other instruments. Even a shaker sometimes can overwhelm the sound of that strumming. And so what we want from the acoustic guitar, most of the times where we really want that is going to be in the verses, and then we don't really need it so much because other instruments take over in the choruses. And so I always tell people, and this is kind of a weird idea, but it's so true, and if you don't do this, you're going to get turned down as an acoustic guitar player, is you have to follow an inverse of whatever the overall perceived dynamics would be. So if it's quiet in the verse, that's when we actually need you to be loud. And I'll say it again just so you can recover from the shock, all right? But when the overall song would be at a 4, then you as a guitar player need to kind of be at an 8. And the thing about acoustic guitar especially is that it sounds the best when you turn up the volume and then play quietly. And if you're playing loudly, then it will sound bad. And so what happens to most acoustic guitar players is they're playing along, they're playing during the verse, but they're playing too quietly in the verse. And so then they get turned up by the sound person. Because again, they think I'm supposed to be playing the overall song's at a 4, I'm supposed to be playing at a 4, and so then they'll play like this, and this is their moment to shine, but then they're not playing loud enough. And then we get to the next part of the chorus, which would go up to an 8, and so they think, well, I gotta get to an 8, so then they'll change what they're doing and they'll turn to strumming. What just happened is that I am now too loud. I went from being too quiet to now I'm too loud. And the other problem is that it doesn't sound good. I'm playing my guitar too loud. And this is being picked up here by this little microphone, which is going to sound way better than if I plugged it in with a cord. Because when you really strum, when it's plugged in, it sounds awful. So then you have to figure out how loud can I play my instrument and it still sounds good. Because anything more than that is going to be a detriment to you. You need to use the volume knob instead of using your wrist and your arm, the force of your pick going through the strings to make it louder. Because again, we don't need you to be louder. It doesn't actually need to be louder. So you then have to learn how to play the loud parts of the song quietly. And that will be very difficult because you feel it. You feel like it's going somewhere. You wanna give it everything that you got for Jesus. But if you do that, you end up getting turned down, and then you may or may not get turned back up when it comes time for the next part, which then is you playing fingerstyle again, that you're already playing too quiet, but now because you've gotten turned down, is already down. And so unless the sound person likes you or really wants to hear that acoustic sound, they're not going to turn you back up, or they may turn you back up midway through the verse or something. Oh yeah, remember the acoustic guitar, and then you'll just keep repeating the cycle again until they get tired of you, and then they're just going to bury you the whole time, which is not a fun place to be, having been there. myself and having had to do that to other people as well. All right, so that all being said, what we want is that we want to play that quiet part louder or by using either our volume knob, so that way we can make sure that we're, because I, you know, you don't want to overpluck either. Well, that doesn't sound good either. It's too much plucking, but so then when we get to the chorus, I want to switch to the strumming sound because I want that sound because it sounds better. And if I was playing by myself, for sure I would want to do that. And I would need to make sure that I didn't get any louder. And so then I have to learn how to strum then at about the same volume that I was plucking, even though it's going to be significantly louder with the same amount of effort that I am plucking the strings with. So I want to be able to strum at about the same volume. Does that make sense? All right, hopefully it does because I can't see you. It would be weird if I could. All right, so we're gonna go. And then when I go back to my plucking, should be, now it, again, it will sound different, but it should be about the same volume. And I don't have compression doing that. I don't have a sound person doing that. I'm doing that as the musician, and that will keep me in the mix way more. All right. So don't overplay. Don't play. Don't follow the progression of the song unless you're playing by yourself. And even then, it's way less than you think. It's more about it sounding different versus it makes a huge difference. All right, so that's for the acoustic guitar players. And the same thing, we talked a little bit about it last week with the vocals, is that you have to learn how to make your voice sound different without it actually getting louder or being louder. Now, again, if you're using compression, if you're using a vocal writer, if you're using the master bus limiter, you can definitely get away with a whole lot more. But if you don't have those things available to you, then you have to, and it's just good idea to do it because then you don't have to rely so much on technology. It's to just be able to do it yourself. And so again, why people often get turned down is because they get to these next sections of the song and then they start singing, but they're trying to bring this intensity, this volume increase. And then the sound person is like, whoa, wait a minute. And they'll turn you down to the loudest level sounds okay. And then we'll leave you there for a period of time, if not the rest of the time. So you have to make sure that when you're going from those sections that you're changing the sound of your voice, but you're not getting any louder, all right? And that takes some time. All right, so let me give you an example of what that would sound like vocally, all right? So here's a song that I have recently written, and the verse goes like this. The beating of my comes alive to hear you speak. All right, so that's the volume I want to try to stay at when I go to. So I run to your presence that flows from your throne. Versus, so I run to your presence that flows from your throne. Now, if I'm singing that, he may leave me up, but it'll probably turn me down. And what I want to do is change the intensity versus changing the volume. All right? The beating of my heart. So I run to your presence. Change the sound, kept the volume the same. All right? And you will hear that on the various albums that you love to listen to in all genres. People will whisper sing, be like, I love you, Lord. And you're like, well, why is that so loud? How can you whisper so loudly? Again, it's all those tools that we talked about, keeping the volume the same for you. And if you don't have those, then you have to learn how to do it yourself. All right, that's a lot to take in when it comes to volume. And I've said a lot of things that you may not believe. So you have to go test it out. Go get that decibel meter. on your phone and see if these things be true. And you'll be shocked, because then you'll become a better musician and it'll help you down the road. And your sound person will thank you and keep you in the mix. Hey, wouldn't that be fun? All right, well, that's it for today. If you want to know more about us, head over to musicministry.co. You can check out all of our books, other articles, and video resources that we have for you. If there's anything we can do for you, please don't hesitate to let us know. And until then, have a fantastic week.